Welcome back to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. The final part of a lecture given by NPR's Ron Elving is about to begin. Elving visited Fort Wayne last month and spoke on the question, how deep is our commitment to democracy? Elving will continue in a moment with what he believes is the best cure for what has caused our democracy to struggle. Thank you for listening.
Here's my idealistic side. I believe that the cure, and really the only effective cure they can be for what ails democracy, is more democracy. If we believe that vox populi, vox dei, like they inscribe on the buildings, is actually true, then the answer is to hear from more populi, and to hear more from them, and to hear from more of them. Now, I say to my students, vox populi, vox dei, I recognize the varying degrees of student haze. And there's one particular degree of it that comes with any reference to Latin. And they don't all take Latin anymore. They didn't probably all ever, but fewer than ever take Latin. So when you say vox populi, vox dei, they nod, but they don't know what you're talking about. So it does mean the voice of the people is the voice of God. And if you want to discern, if you will, then, in either the classic Latin notion of God or in a contemporary sense of an ecumenical God or in a classic Judeo-Christian tradition of God, if in any of those senses you want to hear the voice of God, you have to hear more of the vox populi. If you want to be a democracy, if you want to believe in what a democracy can produce and how well it can enable us to govern ourselves. Ideally, we should hear from literally everyone, or at least from everyone who is wishing to be heard. And I think in some sense, at some level, at some depth, everyone does want to be heard. And ideally, everyone should know something about what they're talking about. Right? I'm not asking everybody to have either the same opinion or an equally well-evidenced opinion or be equally ready to present to the United States Supreme Court and take questions from them. No. But they should have some idea what they're talking about. They're going to have some idea what they're talking about, and they're going to get it from some place. They're going to get it from someone. And that's where that wonderful word, the media, come in. Because we in the media are full of information. Not of all equal value, not of all equal claim to being the truth, but we have a lot of information, and it washes over all of us all the time, all the time. We used to have a time in the day when we looked at a newspaper, or we listened to a show, or we watched a program on television, and that was when we got the news. But, that seems quaint now. It truly does. It's on our minds, it's in our pockets, it's on the screen everywhere you go. It's constant. And I can't begin to say psychologically whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. It doesn't feel very good. Even for those of us in the business, it doesn't feel very good, but it is certainly the case. So there's lots of information out there. And I think to some degree that turns people off. They're just overwhelmed by it. There's just so much that they see, read, and hear. And a lot of it is discouraging. And a lot of it is confusing, and it contributes to the muddle. And then they hear something that then turns out not to be true, or something that gets clearly disproved, and they have a tendency to lose a great deal of their belief in all of it. Well, I can't believe anything you hear these days. That's an expression you'll certainly hear fairly often. How do you drive a national conversation, asks Jeff Guerin, who is a pollster I have respect for, when there are 100 voices and sources of information instead of 3. Now, what does he mean when he says 3? ABC, CBS, and NBC. That's what we grew up with. Do you know that in the 70s and 80s, still, like in the 60s, something along the lines of 80% of all the households in the United States were watching one of those 3 evening news programs? 80%? Can you imagine? And those 3 news programs, while they had different talking heads on them, different deliverers, Uncle Walter, Huntley Brinkley, the people who were writing those scripts those guys were reading on the air were pretty much interchangeable between all three of those networks. And those networks were all located within a few blocks of each other in Midtown Manhattan. And most of the people who worked there had gone to one of three or four schools. Seriously. There was that much interconnection between them, and they were peddling with very, very little variation, much the same agreed-upon view of the news. Now, there's much to criticize in that. There's much to criticize about that. At the same time, it did create a shared base of information from which people then proceeded, and there was such a thing as a story that everyone had heard and gotten some sort of information about. And I don't mean to criticize Walter Cronkite. I think he was a great man. But he's just one man. And his view of the news was enormously influential, probably more so than any one person should ever be. So how do you now deal with a wildly different environment in which instead of just three voices and not enough variety, you have this cacophony of people who just seem to have everything in the world to say and want to be very insistent about it? Well, I think what we need is to bring together as many voices and as many points of view as can humanly be brought together in one place. I'm not talking about aggregating or having a news feed that has 75 or 80 different inputs into it. I'm talking about trying to subsume all of that into a presentation in a reasonable amount of time. And the 360-degree input ought to be at a place that is of universal access. In other words, it shouldn't be something that costs $500 a year or something that costs really anything at all. Obviously, you need to have a device. Obviously, you need to have some access to the internet or to some kind of a receiver, but the kind that everybody has, and not something special. Not something that you have to subscribe to. Not something that has to have some barrier to entry of an economic kind. 360 degrees input, universal access. All right. I'm not saying we're perfect, but that's what we're trying to do. I know we fail. I know that no one can possibly do what I'm describing, and certainly not do it day in and day out. But if there's anybody out there who's trying, it's public media. Trying to make it as universally accessible as possible. Trying to reach out to as many people as possible. Do we get a perfect mix? No, we don't. But it is certainly what we are trying to do. And if there is someone you never hear in public media, if there's someone that you never hear on NPR, it's not for our lack of trying. There are people who do not respond to requests, even in very high places. So, commercial media used to compete with each other by trying to get every pair of eyes and every pair of ears in the entire country. That's what ABC, CBS, and NBC were trying to do. It's what newspapers used to do when they would fight with each other over the metropolitan base, trying to get the readers in a particular community. You used to have competing newspapers in Fort Wayne. Sadly, it seems to be down to one newspaper and another newspaper that has one employee. That's a burdened employee, let me just say. And that's a typical story. That's happened everywhere in the country. Cities, large and small, have lost their competition among the papers. But that competition, when it existed, was about trying to get everybody to look at that paper because the business model was selling advertising. Selling advertising was the basis for almost all of our media in the United States. That was the model. Not in Ben Franklin's day, but fairly quickly after Ben Franklin, that's where we went. Advertising was the story. And that emphasized the biggest possible audience, and that's what produced what we used to call MOR, or middle-of-the-road news. Yeah, there were a lot of people who believed in the objectivity principle. If you're a philosophy or a historian, you've heard the name John Dewey. He's the guy who came up with that decimal system we finally got rid of. John Dewey really believed you could objectify pretty much everything. Apply the principles of science to the news. Hey, we could have objective news reporting. They started creating something called journalism schools. Didn't begin until 1910, 1911. First one at Columbia University. One of the first public ones was Indiana University. It's still one of the best journalism schools in the country. And they were dedicated to this principle that you could, in some sense or another, objectify this information about civic issues, the news, about governing. Always been an ideal. Rarely, if ever, perfectly achieved. But that was the idea. Well, again, that's what we're trying to do with your help at NPR. Cannot say that we will ever get there, but it matters what you're trying to do. What your goal is, what your ultimate idea is important. And here's the thing about that mass media model, marketing, advertising. Why are newspapers dying? Why do the commercial television stations and the cables, why do they struggle? Because the advertising has all gone online. The big monsters now in terms of media, in terms of getting advertising out to people, are Facebook, Google. They are media companies. I love it when they say, oh, gee, we're just tech companies. We're just producing some little wires and boxes over here. They have taken over the industry of mass advertising. And they don't show any lack of interest in continuing to make billions and billions of dollars a year. You know the numbers. You know how big these companies have gotten. Apple, the first $1 trillion company. Amazon will be the second $1 trillion company. Google storming in that direction. The stock price for Amazon has doubled in the last 5 years. These are the creatures of our economic, political, and social society now, and they have pretty much consumed the entire power of the advertising model to run the media. So the rest of the media are in largely free fall. I like to say NPR could not see its business model fail because we've never had a business model. We ask for money. That is our business model. We ask you to support the ideals of what we do. We do that through our member stations. We don't ask you to send a check to NPR. There are ways you can do that, but we don't ask people to do that. There are foundations and there have been some big grants, but day in, day out, the way we survive is through our member stations, through WBOI and all of its analogs in all the rest of the country. And by the way, if there's somebody with more universal access to their programming than ours, if you can get the internet, you've got us. If you can get a radio signal, we have 12 repeaters, 15 repeaters in Alaska to get around those mountains so that you can get the signal, so that we want to reach this ideal of there being no one in the United States who cannot hear the NPR signal. And we do that entirely through the stations and through our, if you will, business model of asking you to help. So, I believe that we can be a place where all voices can be heard and where virtually everyone has equal and immediate access. That's our ideal, that's what we work toward. Can't guarantee you a perfect execution or getting there all the way, but that's where we're trying to go. Thomas Jefferson famously said that he would sooner have newspapers and no government than have government with no newspapers. And by the way, Thomas Jefferson knew a thing or two about being beaten up in the newspapers. No one has ever been more badly treated or more scabrously libeled than Thomas Jefferson was, but he still said this. Now, what would he say today? Is there some way you could possibly restructure that quotation to have meaning today? All right, last thought. Will the end of history come back? Can the end of something make a comeback? Well, this is Fukuyama's own words. He said, this victory, and he used to call it a victory, for free markets and free elections, has occurred primarily in the realm of ideas or consciousness. In other words, it's up here. As yet, it's incomplete in the real or material world. And of course, as we saw from the pushback of history, incomplete indeed. But there are powerful reasons for believing that it is the ideal that will govern the material world in the long run. In other words, the fight's not over. there has been a tremendous pushback from this concept that free markets and free democracies were going to be the final product of human civilization. But there's reason to fight on, and there's reason to believe that Fukuyama was right in the long run, and that's all he ever promised. So with that, let me just say thank you very much for sitting here and listening to this. I appreciate it, and I would like very much to try to answer your questions. And for those of you who are supporters or listeners to NPR, a special thank you to you.
This has been an episode of WBOI Presents. This entire episode can be found online at WBOI.org. Special thanks to Sweetwater Sound for providing the audio for Ron Elving's lecture. Our music is by Mark Waldeck. You'll be able to hear the Q&A portion of Ron Elving's presentation on a later episode of WBOI Presents, during the upcoming fund drive. Thank you so much for listening to WBOI Presents, a program that is made possible through your support. Folktales is next. Have a wonderful night.